I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, who's here with me today.
Happily not attending E3 this year to see the Simpsons panel, Henry Gilbert.
Hey, me too. And in case you are new to the Patreon, welcome. This is our community podcast. Every month we go over the news in the Simpsons world and in our world. And we also look at the questions and comments we get on the Patreon from you over the past month's worth of episodes.
Yeah, and not just for Talking Simpsons, but also our sister podcast, What a Cartoon. Mm-hmm. Let me say, what a month of May we had.
Yes. I mean, we say this every month, but it's been a very busy month, hasn't it?
Yes, but also a lot of new signups. New Patreon high. And we just put out the Aladdin podcast. I think we're going to get tons more signups now from that.
Yes.
Our longest ever. It is the new longest ever. 3 hours 50 minutes.
Yeah, it almost broke 4 in the editing. I'm sure like 20 minutes were cut out of the final recording.
Yeah. You know, you could have gone over 4 if you just indulgently played the entire songs when we play the songs instead of just parts of them.
I thought about it, but those songs are easily available. That's how I found them. Yes. They're all on YouTube. No. But yes, if you check it out, it's on the What a Cartoon free feed. It's also on the Patreon. You can check out 20 minutes of the Aladdin podcast for free right now, and you can hear the rest of the 3.5 hours if you go up to the $10 level.
Mm-hmm. And just an preview right now of what our June one is going to be. The poll will be going up very soon. The theme is direct to video. Mm-hmm. We are changing it up. We have been doing theatrically released films up to this point, but this time we're going with direct to video animation, and one that kind of cheats that, but it was released on video. It was.
So yes, every Land Before Time movie from Littlefoot's Second Adventure to Dinosaur Graveyard. I don't know what they're called.
The 4 choices are Land Before Time 5, 6, 8, and 10.
I don't believe in 7. I'm sorry, folks. Sacrilege. But let's get into the Simpsons news. So we have a few interesting news items. Henry grabbed some of these for us. And apparently IKEA did a cute recreation of the Simpsons living room in a photo series and some other pop culture living rooms, like the Stranger Things living room.
Yeah, it was a fun little commercial for IKEA, but I'd be lying if I didn't say I was surrounded by IKEA furniture in this very house.
We all are.
I'm looking at my Billy bookcase and I forget the name of my couch, but the couch too. Really good couch. Anyway, yeah, they recreated a ton of things, including the Simpsons living room. And the key to it is it's all things you can buy in IKEA. So it is a couch that looks like the Simpsons couch, but it's an IKEA branded couch. Same with the lamp and even the boat painting behind it. It's cute.
It's cute. I did enjoy that. And Henry, one other news item. I don't mean to alarm you, but there is a new meme in our house.
Yes, yeah.
New meme or memes.
The Homer warning meme. Why don't we listen to a couple real quick here.
Art, I don't want to alarm you, but
hurry up. 9, 8.
I like seeing when Simpsons memes come and go and a new one comes. You know, we did the smashing chair.
Yeah, yeah. And that was big in late 2018, I think.
And of course, and that was what followed the steamed hams revolution.
Yeah.
And now the new one is that scene from Gamblor.
That's right,
Springfield with a dollar sign.
And instead of parodying a like minute and a half scene like the steamed hams one, it parodies a 4-second scene with really good animation. My favorite one so far is the one that defies the meme, in which Homer never enters the room. It's just Bart is sleeping, and he runs into the door, and he's just like, oh, my head. It just pulled from another, episode, but you kind of see the screen shake when he runs into the door, and Bart never is woken up.
That's really good. Another of my favorites is where it's all the hurry up, like you're running out of time video game ones, like that one. The one of like the sonic anxiety-inducing drowning sound. Burp, burp, burp. It made me, like all these memes do, it makes me appreciate the original even more. Like, yeah, the animation of Homer, like, kicking the door open and the sound of the kick when he says, Bart!
Yeah.
Like, it's such a good, like, combo of sound.
And just great poses on Bart, and we get the big eye, the big pupils from season 5, too.
I love those big pupils. I'm sorry, Matt Groening, those big pupils rule.
You're wrong.
You're totally wrong.
check out all those memes. They're all online somewhere. There's, like, a YouTube reel that Henry showed me, so they're really easy to find. I don't know if there's an official name for them, or it's the boogeyman scene.
Yeah, boogeyman. That's let's call it the boogeyman meme.
I've seen a really good one with Mr. X from Resident Evil 2 Remake.
Ooh, I got to check that one out.
That even includes the scene of the first-person camera opening the door, and Homer has the shotgun pointed at the camera.
Yeah, that's great.
So in other news, we're not going to be at E3, but The Simpsons will be there, or at least Matt Selman will be there, for a panel about I think it's a retrospective on Simpsons games.
Yes, though there's some implication that this could also be an announcement of a new game as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Selman, time to get into our games press past here. But this was announced by the master of E3, Jeff Keighley, who does a bunch of constant streams during E3.
Shaking my head. I'll tell you why in a minute. I'm okay. Full of resentment.
But I mean, there's reasons to resent him, I agree. But he does run a good stream on his shows.
He streams a good ham.
He streams a good ham. And so of the many, many, many streams he's got planned, some he doesn't announce because the games haven't been announced yet. And so one of them is, though, The Simpsons on the first day of E3, June 11th, a first official day. E3 truly begins on Saturday, and it's a torturous week where you're not paid overtime. It's always fun.
I think it truly begins in January. That's when you start planning for it.
And Judges Week, of course, and you gotta... Well, anyway. So, all the pre-E3 meetings. I read about the day of this recording, they officially announced Call of Duty Modern Warfare, the new one, and just reading cool dude Austin Walker's write-up about it. He's like, oh yeah, I saw it last week. I'm like, Jesus Christ, right? All the pre-E3 things, yeah. And embargoed shit you got to see before you even go to E3. But anyway, The Simpsons will, this leads me to believe that before June 11th, they will announce a new real Simpsons game of some sort, and that will be part of that panel. I mean, E3 is about new things. It's not about old things. At the very least, I feel we'll get a re-release of some old Simpsons stuff.
Yeah, it better not be Tapped Out as coming to Switch.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the dark ages we've been in since 2012.
Yeah, I reviewed that game, or actually just did a blog about it for 1UP, and I just, I hated it.
Yeah,
It's not a game.
It's a money printing machine is what it is.
It's a coloring book that you feed money.
But I just pray that EA, who has the Tapped Out license, did not get this next license, and that they got a new partner.
Me too.
Anybody's better than EA. Anybody.
I'm personally resentful because Jeff Keighley gets to do all the fun stuff.
Yes.
And Jeff Keighley, you can give Hideo Kojima all the piggyback rides you want. You can hang out with all the superstars you want. I defy you to find a bigger Simpsons video game expert than me.
I know.
And I will not go to E3. I will host the panel from my apartment, but I should be hosting that panel.
It's not too late to start an online campaign for this.
Tweet assertively at Jeff Keighley saying, make Bob Mackey the host and then explain who I am, because he doesn't know who I am.
You need a hashtag for
that. Yes, exactly. Oh, you guys can think of one, but I
I mean, we're 20 years too young to be friends with Jeff Keighley.
That's true. I mean, but because I wrote blog posts about every Simpsons game a decade ago, I am the source on every Wikipedia article about Bart versus the Juggernauts or Escape from Camp Deadly. I'm not actually mad about this. I'm laughing.
You're actually laughing.
My haters are trying to destroy me, Henry.
But I am kind of looking forward to this. And I mean, Matt Selman, he's one of the two credited writers on The Simpsons Game.
Yeah, and he wrote, I believe he was the writer officially for Road Rage and Hit Run when they were let's get a person who writes for the show to write for the game. That sounds crazy.
And it always sounded like he's the one guy who played video games on the staff.
He's youngest staff member at 48.
Well, now he's kind of the... We talked a little bit about this with Jack Allison, but it's common knowledge. He's shadow showrunner, or he showruns a handful of episodes each season now. He's he's right up there with Al Jean.
Yeah.
Under Al Jean, creatively is the lead on the thing. But anyway, I look forward to that on June 11th. That's Tuesday. Stream it at work. Don't tell your boss.
Yeah, on your phone. they can't own your phone. Anyways, in not as late news, we have some bad news for The Simpsons. They hit an all-time ratings low among the key adult 18 to 49 demographic, that is the nuts and gum demographic, with the season 30 finale. And you know what? All TV ratings are bad, except for three shows.
Yeah. But I mean, still an all-time low. That's, boy, that's not great for them. I mean, I wasn't watching it, and I think the reviews weren't great. I did hear that they did a fake documentary episode that at least the AV Club, for what that's worth, gave a really good review. So I think they had some not bad episodes this season comparatively.
Yeah, apparently they only had 1.4 million viewers. If you look at the ratings for the episodes that we're doing now, it's like 12 or 14 million, sometimes 20. Mm-hmm. And those are considered like number 30 on the ratings list for that week.
That's just how much everything has changed. Television's dying. That's the truth. And also that reminds me too, someone corrected me. I didn't get that comment, but I think it was on Twitter. Someone corrected me that I said they still work with Film Roman. For the past 4 years, it's just been Fox Animation as the go-between. So that, if we're looking at why the animation is not as good these days.
Yeah, Film Roman has the mark of quality.
More quality.
Yeah. And this is like the Disney update on this podcast, but it's not too in-depth. So basically, the Freeform channel will also have Simpsons reruns along with FXX. So yes. Freeform was what, the Family Channel or Fox Family at some
formerly
point?
Formerly Family Channel, then Fox Family, then ABC Family, and then... I think it was Disney Family, and then just Freeform.
Okay.
I mean, it really got its start as a channel owned by the Pat Robertson and the 700 Club. Like,
you don't want that money on your hands.
That was actually part of the deal when Fox Family bought it, and it became Fox Family, not the Family Channel. They still had to air the 700 Club for like years after. It's crazy. But anyway, yes, Freeform is now just like its name says, it's just kind of everything. It's just stuff.
That's just content. It's not different than any other cable channel. It's not different than Bravo or E or the Learning Channel. Everything is just like a content tube.
No identity at all. Yeah. But yes, this is another of those side effects of Disney getting the Fox purchase is that while Simpsons reruns, if you recall, three, four years ago, when every Simpsons ever got put on FXX, that was a major moment because for decades, Simpsons was only locally syndicated. It didn't have reruns on any cable channel, which was like different from every other show ever. And now when it got on FXX, it was a landmark deal. I was at the San Diego Comic-Con where they announced it. They spent opulent amount of money showing off every Simpsons ever. Hmm. And now just a few years later, FXX is like, it's not a special. They lost their crown jewel and it's going to be airing on Freeform as well.
I just don't like that there's an FX and an FXX. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Well, that's channel drift too, as I believe it was. They just had FX and then they decided they were making too many original series on FX. So they'd move most of those to FXX while FX would go back to being the Fox Movies channel.
Okay. So it was Always Sunny. Is that on FXX now?
I believe
something?
That moved there. Archer definitely moved there, as did the Louis C.K. show.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's not canceled?
I mean, it is canceled.
Along with the man himself.
Yes. No, I mean, boy, is it a weight off my shoulders to not have to talk about how he's the most brilliant filmmaker ever.
Yeah. No. I mean, it turns out he's like Woody Allen in all the ways.
Yeah. No, I saw a great point about Louis online that it was like he was an Opie and Anthony free speech dude for all those years. And then he's like, oh, what if I made Woody Allen type things? Then everyone will think I'm brilliant.
He's got a lot to say.
Yeah. I stopped watching that show because the show is just fucking aimless. Like, it's just like anything will be called brilliant. That's what it felt like to me.
I watched one season and I was like, well, that's enough. Yeah, and then I watched one episode of Marc Maron's show, and I was like, oh, well, I've already seen this.
Yes, yeah.
It was called Louis.
It just feels like a show that's supposed to feel like it's great. Like, you're just, it just runs on prestige. I was watching Deadwood again recently, because the new movie comes out tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Jeez. Yep. Okay.
And when I was watching, I was like, man, this is a challenging, frustrating show, and that's how I know it's good. Mm. It's just, like, opaque, and just is full of weird sentences.
I still have to watch that, by the way.
It's a great one.
I know. I want to do it.
If you've got Amazon Prime, you can give it a watch.
Ooh, indeed, I do.
Yeah, but I think I got back into watching it because Ian McShane, the best actor on the whole show, he has a major part in John Wick. So after seeing John Wick 3, my husband had never seen Deadwood. So I'm like, if you like Ian McShane, you got to watch Deadwood.
Hmm.
But anyway, that has nothing to do with Freeform. But that's where you're going to get to watch Simpsons reruns.
Yeah, if you watch cable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Simpsons reruns, also their worth changes quite a lot soon once Disney Plus launches.
November,
well.
Right? Yep. So moving on to comments from our lovely patrons. And the first episode is Dumbbell Indemnity. And Henry put together notes for this one. He put in parentheses, many nice congratulations to Bob and Nina on their relationship. And I'll say everyone was very, very nice.
Yes.
And it turns out, and I knew this before we revealed the dark secret about us, lots of people ship us, which I find very cute.
Oh, that is adorable. You guys, I mean, you're a very adorable couple, and it was nice that your love can now, you know, be in the open.
Yes.
You don't have to just pretend like, well, I guess we're both at Disneyland today. Isn't that interesting?
We're just palling around, two pals kissing each other on the face. So Nick says, if Henry wants to play water damage poker, then I will see his story and raise him mine. One night, me and my wife visited friends out of town for a night of drinking and board games. We arrived home at 2 a.m. to find one of the supply lines to our kitchen sink had burst and had been flooding the house for presumably hours. The next morning, a water mitigation company and a general contractor began the month-long process of removing all the hardwood floors in my house and setting up industrial-sized blowers and dehumidifiers, which raised the temperature of the house to 130 degrees and necessitated a few days in a hotel. We had no kitchen for 2 weeks, and we were relegated to our bedroom while the rest of the house was repaired. In the end, we had a new hardwood laid throughout the house, new tile in the bathroom, new duct work for the AC, and a new granite counter in the bathroom since they broke the old one removing it. Hard to believe a $3 hose caused $35,000 in damages. That because of homeowners insurance, we were thankfully only on the hook for $1,200. On a side note, I can identify with the episode of King of the Hill, Mutual of Omabois, a lot more now. I wonder if Surly Joe gave him a 50-cent washer from his truck.
Stern Lecture.
He's Surly Joe and Stern Lecture are the same, different.
Yeah, well, they're kind of the same guy. Yeah,
Barge, but... get my gun.
Yeah, that story is terrifying. It's one of those few things where you're like, boy, this is what you don't have to worry about by being a millennial who can't own a home.
The joys of renting are like saying this is someone else's problem.
Yeah, I mean, your landlord takes all your money, but at the very least you get to make it their problem for a time. The next comment is from please forgive me, John Peder Gronsveen Opsfall. Sorry, John. Let's say John. He says, Rich Hall is more known in Europe than I think, because we talked about how ugly Rich Hall is.
And he was based on, or Mo was based on him.
Yes, yeah. He used to be pretty regular on BBC show QI. He sometimes jokes about his looks, but in my opinion, his comedy is more about being an American, which goes over well with a European audience. My wife and I went to see one of his shows here in Norway earlier this year, and it was very funny. I even got to go on stage and participate in a song with him.
Oh my God, you saw him up close? Are you okay?
His eyes were lost in his crags.
He's got a face for British TV, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that said before.
Stealing from Jim Gaffigan, by the way.
You can be famous in other countries as an American. But you're still chasing fame in America. Mm. But I think it's funny. I want to check out all of his America humor. For the European audience, how is he presenting us to the EU?
It better be flattering, so help me, Rich. So Lisa the Simpson is up next, and Joe Hodgson says the frozen baseball player you were thinking of, Henry, is Ted Williams, a Hall of Fame left fielder who played for the Boston Red Sox in the 40s and 50s. I live in the Boston market, so I remembered his death and freezing pretty well, and it was a rather sad story. Williams was a somewhat complicated guy who was obviously really good at hitting a baseball, but was also notoriously prickly, didn't like the media, and didn't like to acknowledge the fans. At the same time, he was fundamental in the success of the Jimmy Fund, which is associated with Dana-Farber and a childhood cancer fund. He spent a lot of time with cancer-stricken children, but didn't spend much time with his own kids, and was an admitted shitty father. When he was old and nearing his end, his son saw cryogenics as a way for them to have a do-over, wow, and he battled with his sister over his dad's wishes in court, and shortly after Williams died in 2002, his son was actually stricken with cancer, wow, and died not long after. I believe he too was frozen. So when science figures it out, they can both thaw and then sort of, reconcile,
right? They can play catch together then, finally, at long last. No, that I half remembered that story about Ted Williams. I didn't know the extra tragedy that his son fought his sister over it, and that then he died of cancer after winning it. Like, that's heavy. Ted Williams, a complicated man. Also on that episode, Purple Comet says, Herb Powell, Homer's half-brother, contradicts the Simpsons gene theory that Grandpa Simpson pushes. Herb was Abe's son, yet he went to Harvard, ran a successful automobile company, and bounced back after a business collapsed. On the other hand, he did put the full brunt of his company's resources behind Homer without any oversight, leading to this ruin. So maybe his upbringing countered most, but not all, of the inherited stupidity.
Yeah, I think the trusting Homer was the Simpsons gene kicking in and realizing. I mean, if you look at canon, it doesn't make any sense. The gene thing only works for that one episode, really.
I mean, he does, Herb does call back and say, he makes a phone call appearance in one episode that says, I lost my business again. Homer, help me.
Oh, that's right. So yeah. That was within the history of this show, right?
Yes. Yeah. So he kind of comes back and forth, but maybe it is that his gene lay dormant through nurture instead of nature, but then meeting Homer activated it.
Interesting.
So it could be that.
So we have this little wiggy up next, and Jared Hornbeck says, I have a theory about Skinner's deadpan, he's killing me, that I think is a complete coincidence, but would like to be intentional. If you've ever seen the film Friday the 13th, the final chapter, there's a scene where a character is being killed and continuously states out loud, he's killing me, while he's getting killed, and it's incredibly awkward. I feel like the scene was ad-libbed, and the director said, okay, so act like you're getting killed, and action. My friends and I would crack up every time we watched the movie at the absurdity of narrating your own death when it's clearly apparent to the person watching it happen. I doubt this hilarious scene was in the writers' minds at all, because it is totally reasonable to think Skinner would deliver such a literal line so matter-of-factly. However, part of me hopes that it is actually a super obscure wink to one of horror's most unintentionally funny scenes. And I think I'm vaguely aware of that Friday the 13th scene, because I think it does get replayed in like bad movie clips and things like that.
I watched that not too long ago. I think the final chapter is where it's not really Jason, and then because in the next one he gets reborn.
Oh, I think 4 is the final chapter and 5 is something else.
Oh, New Beginning or something?
Yeah, and then that's the one with fake Jason.
Yeah, then 6 is Jason Lives. I only most recently have watched 5 because that one is a fun one. But that I do love the, he's killing me. That's a classic.
Yeah.
Right up there with Troll 2.
I think it could be, I mean, I'm not sure if it's intentional. I doubt they're referencing that movie, but it could be like, often you will get a line reading stuck in your head, just the most obscure line reading ever. And I have one in my head from like a Sam and Max episode from 1997.
Oh, really?
Just the guy saying, the end. And that pops into my head for no reason because I'm crazy. But it could just be that like some writers had it packed away in their head. So there you have it.
Yeah, it could be. Oh, but also I just like his dry delivery because Skinner's boring, that he would just say like, he's killing me. Recent guest of the show, Thad Kalmarowski, says, I'm surprised you didn't note how this epitomizes the kid-centric nature of Scully years. There is literally no B story here with adults, and that really contributes to its anti-third act. That dog has some amazing adventures. It's me, Chief Wiggum, and burn them all. Hold a top place in my vernacular, however, so this gets a lifetime pass. And yeah, I complain about every episode being kid-centric, but I forgot to do it on Little Wiggy.
Yeah, I mean, we're sitting down here. We're going to record Girly Edition soon. It's another pretty kid-centric one. And maybe they were leaning into the fact that at that point they knew they had a lot of kids watching. Or they were like, I mean, what Bill Oakley told us is like our audience was children. Like adults were not watching The Simpsons. Like you guys are the adults who became adults while watching the show.
Yeah, I think, you know, it could be too that we've said a million times, but Scully is a dad. He was the first real dad showrunner. So maybe that's why, be surprised when I say this again in Girly Edition recording, Bob, but the moments with the kids, like especially the sibling rivalries, feel like totally ripped from a parent's perspective on dealing with kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Instead of how someone remembers their sibling rivalries from childhood, like especially the way Marge just deals with them. So I think it just comes from Scully's inner dadness just coming through in the show. Like it's just part of how he led. Same, no different from how David Merkin's hate of sitcoms just had to come through the show, or Bill and Josh's love of old men.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, like I was watching, I've been watching through Bob's Burgers, and I'm like in season, I don't know, 6 now, and there are a ton of stories just about the kids, like the kids have an adventure or whatever. And I haven't really watched the early season, so I went back to watch like an episode of season two, and it's much bawdier, it's much racier. There's like a running joke about Bob having like a boner and things getting stuck to it.
Oh,
so I'm like, wow, this show, I think it changed its focus to be more for kids, like a little like PG-13-ish for kids.
I think they saw the songs sung by the kids were getting more and more popular, so it started to kind of take over for the show.
So Simpson Tide is up next, and we have in the notes here that Pumpkin Bob and Justin Brown have really good but also very long comments about working in the military and on subs, so check those out. I'm guessing they're too long to read on here.
Oh yeah, I mean, Pumpkin Bob especially, he does like a four-part very educational thing about working in the Navy and like being on subs, and even stories about like homosexuality in the Navy and women on subs. And and Justin Brown also has interesting stories about working in the military too. And read the whole things on the Patreon, guys.
Yeah, all of our comments are so good, so it's worth checking them out.
Very hard to pick just two for each episode.
So Andrew Giacchetti says, "Oh man, I never considered the option of Disney taking The Simpsons behind a paywall, and that would really rub me the wrong way. It was bad enough when ABC put Star Trek in the Twilight Zone, two shows the world desperately needs right now, and hid them on a platform no one cares about. Personally, I think it's ridiculous for a broadcast show or a cable show that could be on TV where it has always been to be put behind an additional paywall, but thankfully, cartoon piracy is laughably easy from a streaming point of view. But it will suck after damn near 25 years of my life. I will no longer be able to watch The New Simpsons on Sunday night. I still watch every new episode and will continue to do so until the show dies or I do. Taking that away from me will only further inflame my hatred for media consolidation. I don't want a pirate, but in the absence of a reasonable alternative, I have no issues with it. And I consider putting a show that people have been watching for more or less for free for 30 years behind a paywall is unreasonable in my book." Yeah, I mean, I didn't mention this on our Michael Jackson podcast, but I think I mentioned in a later podcast that what all this is really about is just how nothing is allowed to fall into the public domain anymore, especially now that Disney owns it.
Yes.
And a 30-year-old TV show should be available for all people to watch for free. It should be just freely available at this point. But now that Disney owns it, it will be just you know, theirs forever and will never be in the public domain. But the people who are mad at you know, Fox or Al Jean or James L. Brooks or Matt Groening for you know, if you don't like the fact that they hid that episode or that they don't want that episode to be on TV, you should actually just be mad at, you know, public domain laws, because the Michael Jackson DVD, the Michael Jackson episode, you should be able to sell it yourself on a DVD. It should be in the public domain. It's from 1991.
Yeah, Disney really succeeded thanks to the public domain, and then they kind of shut the door behind it for anybody else.
Thanks for helping us out, government. We'll take over from here.
Well, I think that paywall thing, it is totally bullshit. CBS All Access, like, who, you, no one will pay for that for two shows. For Simpsons, though, I am more likely to pay for that Disney Plus in general, because it's pretty cheap and they're going to have a lot more stuff than CBS All Access has. But it is pretty similar.
Yeah, though. Come on, CBS, just sell your shit to Hulu or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Like, even that Picard, I don't think is going to move the needle. That Captain Picard show.
But Picard's so old. Isn't old Picard fun?
I mean, I'm sure people will enjoy it, but it does seem pretty desperate to me.
And Stephen C. Nettle says, "The Lennon zombie bit always cracked me up. When this episode originally aired, I was in graduate school studying Soviet history and had just finished a paper on Lenin personality cult, including a whole section on the Lenin mausoleum. From the 1920s to the late 1980s, it was a major tourist attraction with lines that lasted hours. I visited the mausoleum several times in 95 when I was studying at Moscow State University, and there were hardly any lines at all then, so I could take my time looking at the body. Entering, you walk down a long flight of stairs and then turn and enter the actual display room. The whole experience was very surreal, almost like a dark, uncomfortable dream. I had to wonder if one of the writers had the same deep familiarity with Soviet era history, because supposedly it was said in Soviet propaganda that when true communism was finally achieved, Soviet science would be so advanced that it would be able to bring Lenin back to life so that he could lead the new utopia and finally destroy capitalism."
Well, maybe it will. We're still waiting, right?
I'm still waiting on old Lenin there. I'm very distrustful of this person I'm very distrustful of you, Stephen, that you went to Moscow University.
Ooh.
I got some questions for you, comrade.
Was that in Massachusetts?
Willie Horton's teaching there. That was very interesting. You know, I've never been anywhere near Russia, but if I would visit there, I don't even know if I'd want to. There's so many things to see there, to like stand in line that long just to see like a gross corpse. Like that just doesn't seem fun to
me. It's
a
famous corpse.
I mean, sure, but I just don't want to look at corpses. Like that's wrong to me.
Get a selfie.
I bet they don't allow that.
They would just murder you on sight. So up next we have What a Cartoon comments, and this first one is for Captain Planet, and Kyle Orland says, not sure if this was mentioned in the podcast and I missed it, but I've always been a bit bewildered by the naming inspiration for Hoggish Greedley. It's a too obvious nod to Horace Greeley, a 19th century newspaper man. From Wikipedia, quote, he popularized the slogan, go west, young man, and grow up with the country. He endlessly promoted utopian reforms such as socialism, vegetarianism, agrarianism, feminism, and temperance, while hiring the best talent he could find, unquote. He also served in Congress and helped found the Republican Party, boo, back when that party was strongly associated with the abolitionist movement that propelled Abraham Lincoln to the White House. Yay. Insert joke about, hey, did you know it was actually Democrats that like slavery? Checkmate, libturd. So that's Kyle Orland, obviously. Making a little joke there.
Yes, yeah. I had never, I guess I'd maybe heard the name Horace Greeley before, but
Greeley.
I never looked into it, but
I think
it sounds like anti-Republican propaganda from Ted Turner.
Yeah, that's I've heard his name, like you'd see his name in like journalism classes and stuff like that. Okay. That's basically it.
I didn't take journalism.
You didn't go to J school?
No,
I didn't go to J school. I went to L school.
We are united in being English majors in the games press as opposed to journalism majors.
And that makes me better.
Which honestly, in either case, you wasted your time.
Exactly. And money. And life.
Somebody corrected. I forget which episode it was where we really dogged on college. Somebody did have a smart correction for me that I will address now. You know who you are, I guess, if you're hearing this. But they did point out that, like, when we said don't waste your time in college, I did mean that for the liberal arts. If you want to be a scientist, you probably should go to college, since that's, like, those academics, you kind of need that.
So we are now STEM weirdos.
If you're going to go into STEM, which is apparently important or whatever, it makes everything I use to do my job, then yes, I'm certain you should go to college, probably.
But without the liberal arts, we would not have podcasts, because everyone that leaves school with a master's degree makes a podcast, because there are no teaching jobs anymore.
No. Oh, and so from the next episode of What a Cartoon, it's My Life as a Teenage Robot, and Scott Johnson says, I'm a little surprised Bob and Henry didn't mention that Rob Renzetti was significant to the beginnings of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. Not only was he working in tandem with Lauren Faust, who he also worked with frequently, but he was a story editor for every episode in seasons 1 and 2. This would have been around the same time as Symbionic Titan, but he would have to leave the show to work on Gravity Falls. I know several people, myself included, tried out MLP because it had good talent such as Faust and Renzetti involved. Honestly, that was kind of a blind spot in my research on Renzetti there. I mean, I feel like we've come back around the other way of making fun of bronies. That was like, we really tried out bronies as the new furries to mock in the early 2010s.
Yeah, it's kind of like also like new juggalos in a way.
Yeah, juggalo type of thing too, which I feel like now that we have Nazis, it's just like, why do we make fun of these things that weren't Nazis?
Yes, it does feel like a more innocent time when furries and juggalos and bronies were the targets and not actual Nazis.
Yeah. Which, like, I think some people, I don't know if I ever made a brony joke on Twitter. Maybe I did. I
wrote a comedy article about bronies. So, but none of us, not all of our hands are, there's blood all over them.
Yeah. It is slightly hypocritical for nerds to make fun of it because we like other children's cartoon shows. They just don't happen to be pretty My Little Ponies.
They're full of ducks.
Yeah, exactly. Us liking DuckTales is no different from somebody liking the rebooted My Little Pony, if you ask me. And so I think we were all being a little too harsh to the bronies. Not that the brony community can't be a little, could learn some things. Learn some manners.
I'm sure we'll do that cartoon at some point. It's
for sure
hugely popular and important and stuff like that. So it'll happen at some point.
There is, this podcast will never end because there are way too many anime.
All the bronies and Pegasisters out there, just keep giving us your money, and one of these days we'll come through.
One of these days.
So up next, we have a comment from Imara, and Curtis Bostic says, it's really cool to hear about the animation industries outside of the US, Canada, and Japan, and I guess Korea too, if you count the Rough Draft studio there. It's a good reminder that there's a whole world of cartoons out there. There's probably hundreds of great shows in all sorts of countries that will never come close to my radar. And we hope, this is me speaking, by the way, we hope you all enjoy that episode. Mm-hmm. It was off of our radar too, and I imagine a lot of you have never seen it. So hopefully you checked it out after our podcast.
You know, that also a comment in there about the Rough Draft studio or just Korea in general. It's like Korea does so much animation, but they just don't get to do many creatively run things from there. And that's kind of the difference also for Amara too. It's like, it's one thing to do the legwork on it and to make all the stuff like Korea does with so many productions, but it's another to get to make your own show. And like that takes different kind of funding, you know.
And Korea makes animation for everybody. Like Japan has always relied on Korea too.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny to think like, oh yeah, all these and like the fucking documentary about the making of Miyazaki Spirited Away, he was kind of peeved that they had to outsource to Korea a couple scenes just because they couldn't get it done in time otherwise. And I mean, I think the quality came back great, but I think in an old school way of thinking for Japanese production studios, it might be that like, oh, Korea's cheaper. It can't be done as well as us. I don't know. There's probably a lot of stuff mixed into that feeling there. But finally, our last comment is for the What a Cartoon for Daffy that we just posted. And actually, this is Thad Komorowski, the guest himself, commenting in response to people asking, why does Thad feel like he has to defend Frizz Freeling? Thad says, those days might be long over, the Frizz Freeling attacking days might be long over, but John is correct. Freeling is generally shat on for not being as flamboyant as Jones, Clampett, and Avery. I haven't seen a lot of Tashlin criticism, who remains absolutely another favorite of mine, but his output was very short-lived and not terribly influential, so I understand if he gets forgotten. I think it's the someone has to be the bad guy syndrome in fandom and criticism. Mm-hmm. I used to buy into it when I was younger, but JFC, Jesus fucking Christ, look at Fritz's filmography. If this was just a job to him, then he did it motherfuckingly well. Nowadays, I refuse to hate on any of these guys.
That is true. It's really true. Like, someone has to be the bad guy or someone has to be lesser. Like, I don't see it as much as someone who's been part of creative things. I don't see it as much with our podcast, Henry, because we have like sort of the same approach. But like with Retronauts, I see that all the time and it drives me crazy. Just like, I like Jeremy, but I don't like Bob. Or I like Bob, but I don't like Jeremy because our approaches are different. Just like, can you just say I like Bob? And not say I don't like Jeremy, or I like Jeremy, and not also I don't like Bob. Like, and I get that with like Mystery Science Theater, where it just like you have to choose a host, and me, I'm the dangerous outsider. I'm like, I like both of them. It depends on what mood I'm in.
That's wrong. You have to pick a word. No, that's a fandom reaction in general too. Of like when you have just a group of people, like say you have to pick your least favorite member of Kids in the Hall. You have to like it's same, or like Mr. Show, or directors of a certain age, or and like Simpsons. Writers, all these things, you have to pick your least favorite and most favorite. You have to stratify those things. And I mean, I was mean to Frizz on that very episode. I was pretty, but it's like I never liked his were my least favorite. It's not, and so I, but that doesn't mean he's untalented. Heaven forfend. No, he was very talented. I do think, though, I'd add to Thad's statement that Freeling did the most worst work post-Termite Terrace.
Yeah.
Well, I can't fully quantify that, but he didn't do very good work past 1950. So it's easier to dump on him in that regard as well.
So yes, we're wrapping up another episode of Talk to the Audience. Thanks for joining us, folks. We have a few things to talk about. So we had a huge, awesome May. All kinds of stuff is going on. Of course, the Aladdin podcast just went live recently. Check out the free preview or check out the whole thing if you're on the $10 level. You'll love it. Also, King of the Hill, as of this day we're releasing this podcast, that will be the final episode of Talk King of the Hill Season 1.
Mm-hmm. And that ends the first of our two miniseries this year, because we hit the do two miniseries a year level of our patronage. And, you know, actually, if we get to our next one, which had previously been at 14,000, but we're kind of adjusting it to 15,000 just because because we will need to spend a bit extra on an extra help of editing just to keep up with all that much podcasting from us. So,
to be completely transparent, we are relying for a few podcasts a month on an outside editor just to take some load off of our shoulders, and it's been a huge help.
Really great help.
Yeah. If we do a third podcast miniseries a year, we'll basically have three podcasts a week in perpetuity for the rest of our lives, and we'll really need basically like a full-time editor on hand to edit at least one podcast a week for us. So we're just adjusting our goals as we adjust our budget. Now we're realizing what an editor will cost us and what we need to do in order to afford that person.
Yeah, yeah. So if we hit 15,000, that is when we will do three miniseries a year, meaning basically over 9 months a year, we will be doing three podcasts a week and one that is fully exclusive to the Patreon. But for the next one, before, if we don't hit that anytime soon, the next one will be in the fall, and we will have the voting for that near the end of summer for the next Patreon exclusive miniseries.
Yeah, so we already unlocked that at $11,000, and that's going to be happening. Start rolling out in August. Of course, we'll get to vote on it. And as we said before, King of the Hill will not be on that poll, just to give it a break, as Futurama was not on our last poll, to give it a break. So we're not sure what that poll will be, but it'll be a new miniseries for you. And of course, King of the Hill will be back at some point in the future. We know you're enjoying it, and I personally want to keep doing it forever, but my bones, they're so old.
If only there were, I mean, if me and Bob could just spend all the time podcasting, we probably would, but we do have to like eat and hug our loved
ones. If you want more podcasts, you got to break up Darren and Henry and me and Nina. And that's the only way it's going to happen. Please don't do that.
I'm so happy.
I'm happy too.
And also, yes, if you haven't seen it yet, we just posted the schedule for June of What a Cartoon Podcast. We got Thundar the Barbarian. We got Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2. We've got
Captain Simian and the Space Monkeys.
Yes.
And the fourth one is we're going to be doing an episode from the games era of Ren and Stimpy, Hermit Ren, because the director passed away in May, and he actually had his hand in a ton of great animated things from the 90s and 2000s and 80s. He just never got his own show. So Chris Riccardi will be doing a special about him, and Thad Komorowski will be back to be the guest on that one.
Yes. You know, it was unfortunate timing for our previous Ren and Stimpy one, but I think especially I'm happy we're going to be going back and doing a games Ren and Stimpy, because that era always got a bad rap because thanks to John Kay's efforts to make people think it was the bad episodes.
Now that his reputation is dead, I hope that narrative is dead.
I think it's getting closer to dead. So anyway, those are the What a Cartoons you can look forward to. Read the whole schedule to know where the episodes are. At least two of them you can just find. Just Google them, guys. Others are available on Hulu and whatnot, but you're just going to have to Google Captain Simian. You'll find it on YouTube.
You know what you're doing. You're on Patreon. You can figure things out. But yes, that's been another episode of Talk to the Audience, and we'll see you next month for another brand new episode. Thanks for listening, and thanks for donating.
Infotainment.